yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. All right, the important news of the week is, of course, the Trump tax cuts. We're going to dedicate most of the show, maybe the whole show, to that topic. Actually, it's not Trump tax cuts. It's Trump Goldman Sachs tax cuts. Who put this thing together? Well, the two leading ex-Goldman Sachs investment bankers who are running domestic economic policy in this country under the Trump administration. I'm talking about Steve Mnuchin, who heads up the Treasury, and Gary Cohn, who heads up the Economic Council and will soon probably be the new Fed chair in next February. Okay, so the two key guys put this together, the Goldman Sachsers. Yes, it's a banker's tax bill. Well, why do I say that? Because estimates already are coming out and confirmed by the heads of other big banks like Citibank and others, Chase, who say that the Trump tax cut will result in an increase in their income of 20%. And the smaller regional banks, 9 to 15%. Well, that's a big windfall, 20% immediate profit cut, a profit increase here as a result of the tax cuts. Yeah, that's why I call it a Trump Goldman Sachs, or Trump shadow bank tax cut. Well, are you surprised? I mean, who is Trump? Trump is a big financier. Real estate, commercial real estate, wheeler dealer. These are his boys. And, you know, on a regular basis, his mirror image fellows, finance capitalists, just come in and out of the White House. You know, Adelson and Mercer and all those guys, they have an open door to the White House. They just come in and out quietly, and he talks with them 2 o'clock in the morning. He, Trump, you know, calls them up and says, well, what do you think of this, fellows, so forth, you know. And that's who's running the show here. It's the bankers running the show. Trump is a kind of a noisy figurehead. Sits up there and shoots his mouth off and sticks his foot in his mouth, you know, and the others running the government have to clean it up. But they don't care as long as he eventually does what they want them to. You know, let him jump all around, say everything he wants to say, as long as in the end they get what they want, which is what they're getting. Okay, so let's talk about the Trump tax cut proposals here announced this past week within the context of the whole neoliberalism economic policy restructuring that's in progress. See, neoliberalism is a term that's used to describe the shift that came at the end of the 1970s, early 80s with Ronald Reagan in capitalist domestic and foreign policies. Neoliberal is not a really good term, but it's what people use. So we have to refer to it. Neoliberal technically means a return to markets. You see, liberals, back in the time of Adam Smith, 18th century, believed that the market should rule, that the government, which was largely feudal, monarchical, aristocrat, noble-run kind of governments, intervened in the economy on their behalf and were skimming everything off the top. You see, the merchants and capitalists and bankers that existed at the time had to pay a penalty to the ruling class, which was really, you know, the ancient nobility class. feudalism and nobility, aristocracies kind of coexisted with the new rising capitalists at the time in the 18th century. And they didn't like that. They wanted everything markets, and that's reflected in Adam Smith, you know, and his preference for markets should rule. And this is a central point of capitalist ideology. Markets should rule. Well, you know, when the Depression and World War came in the 20th century, the capitalists had to make big concessions to the rest of civil society, including working class and others, and developed a set of social programs. But as soon as the war was over, those social programs sort of went on for a couple decades, but then by the time we got to the 1970s, particularly in the U.S. and the U.K., the economy and the global economy was in a big funk. And a big new offensive was launched, and in the 70s by corporations and capitalists to take better control of the deteriorating economy in the 1970s. And out of that comes this whole policy of neoliberalism. Neoliberal meaning we're going to return to markets more and get rid of the social compact and all these social programs piece by piece, and the unions, of course, because part of the New Deal was to legitimize and allow unions to organize. Well, now we're going to get rid of the unions. That's part of neoliberalism. But at the heart of neoliberalism is not this return to markets. That's the ideology, you see, to justify the markets are more efficient. You know, that's that main ideological thrust that was developed by academics and pro-business intellectuals in the late 70s, early 80s. Markets work better. Markets never fail. Ha-ha. You know, and markets are more efficient for making money for the rich. And government is the problem. You know, that's what Ronald Reagan said, government is the problem. Well, what he really meant was government on behalf of the rest of us is the problem, but government on behalf of moneyed interest is not the problem. So it's not really truly a return to markets. Neoliberalism is not truly a return to markets. There's elements of that. You know, they deregulate industries and deregulate the banks and so forth. So there's part of that return, but it's really government on behalf of the wealthy class. So that's not free markets. That's not a return to markets. So it's mixed, you know. It's neoliberalism ideology, or the ideology of this whole restructuring that occurred late 70s, early 80s, that's still going on. The ideology is heavily liberal, i.e. 18th century markets rule. That's why it's called neoliberal. But in its essence, neoliberal policy is heavily subsidization of the incomes of the wealthy and their corporations. Peeling the onion one layer here, what are the main elements of neoliberalism? Well, on the economic side, the main elements are tax cuts. One, defense increase, defense spending increase. Two, and of course, if you cut taxes and you raise war and defense spending, you're going to undermine your budget, the government budget. Because when we're talking about tax cuts and defense hikes, we're talking about government policy. It's not the market, it's government policy. But when you do that, cut tax cuts and cut taxes and raise defense spending, you're going to create these government budget deficits. And neoliberalism, at least when it began under Reagan, proposed that, okay, we're going to pay for the budget deficits in two ways. One way was we're going to cut social programs. And they expected to cut hundreds of billions a year out of social programs. I'm talking about 1981, too, here, okay? The other was the ideology that was proposed to address these deficits. The ideology was, if you cut taxes enough, it will stimulate economic growth, and that will raise taxes. That's called supply side. That's ideology. That's nonsense. But it still exists. And there's well-paid people in academia who still, you know, promote and push that BS around. They believe it. So, once again, it's an indication there's a lot of ideology, free markets, efficient markets, supply side, and so forth, that's embedded in neoliberalism. That's how they sell the stuff, you see, to the public. But supply side did not generate additional tax income. It didn't work. I mean, empirically, observably, didn't work. All right. But Reagan got his initial $752 billion tax cut passed when he first came in office. Well, by mid-1980s, it was clear that supply side didn't work, and cutting social programs, they couldn't do that fast enough or deep enough to offset the budget deficits from tax cuts and defense hikes. So they came up with a new additional solution to social program cuts, and that was to borrow the money from everyone else, offshore, bankers, investors, onshore. In other words, sell government treasury bonds to pay for the deficit. You know, to recapitulate here, big tax cuts, big hikes in defense spending result in big budget deficits, only partly offset by social program cuts. Therefore, you got to borrow, the government has to borrow the money to pay for the rest of the deficit. So how did they do this? Well, they created what I call the twin deficit solution. This is going back to Reagan. By mid-1980s, what was the twin deficit solution? The twin deficit is, you offshore your production, your manufacturing, give big tax cuts, by the way, to offshore, right? And they move offshore, and emerging markets start growing, and this offshore movement, in other words, when you move offshore, corporations move offshore, what are they doing? They're taking their money, they're taking their dollars, foreign direct investment, it's called, and they're moving it offshore. And we run what's called a trade deficit. A trade deficit is where we buy more stuff from everyone else in the world than they buy our stuff. In other words, our imports are greater than our exports. And that begins under Reagan, right? We run a trade deficit purposely. If you have a trade deficit, that means dollars are flowing offshore. Foreign direct investment flowing offshore because of policies, right? You run a trade deficit. Up until that time, we didn't run trade deficits. In fact, most of the post-war period, the United States ran trade surpluses. But they ran these huge trade deficits because part of the deal of the twin deficits, budget deficit, trade deficit, part of the deal was, okay, all you foreign investors, all you banks and central banks around the world and so forth, more dollars, which is the international currency now, is flowing out into your economies. We want you to recycle those dollars back to the U.S. You know, all you Saudi and Middle Eastern economies that were buying all the oil from you, your money's flowing offshore, recycle it back to the U.S. I mean, you can only buy so many F-16s, but we want you to buy treasury, U.S. Treasury bonds. So they bring the dollars back, you see, by selling bonds, and that's how they pay for the budget deficit, which means, oh, we can keep cutting taxes on corporations and the wealthy and keep increasing spending and engage in all these foreign wars, because we have the twin deficits and all the money's flowing back. U.S. runs deficits with everybody in the world. Trade deficits. Everybody. Huge amounts. Of course, the biggest is China. You know, we're talking about deficit of 300 billion plus. But we run deficits with Japan and with Europe and with the Middle East. Everybody, we don't discriminate. But the agreement is, you guys got to recycle that money back and buy our bonds, our treasury bonds, and then the government uses the payments on the treasury bonds back to pay for the tax cuts and the defense hikes. That's why in the 20th century, when we started going to war here in the Middle East, this perpetual war, right, we boosted the war spending incredibly by trillions. At the same time, we gave trillions of dollars in tax cuts, mostly to investors and corporations. First time in our history we didn't raise taxes to fight wars. Well, you could do it because of the twin deficits. Well, the twin deficits are an important element of neoliberalism. It has nothing to do with markets. Social program cuts, steady, perpetual, chipping away at all the social programs of the 30s and 40s is an important part of the neoliberal offensive. Defense hikes, increasing war spending, important element, and tax cuts. Now, what we see here with Trump Goldman Sachs, is the latest in this series of tax cuts. It's been going on perpetually since 1981. You know, we had big cuts in 1981-82. They had what they called the so-called, and they're pushing this lie, tax reform in 86. I'll explain how it wasn't. And then, of course, under Clinton, 97-98, and then big tax cuts under George W. Bush in 2001, 2, 3, 4, and then $180 billion, under Bush it was $3.4 trillion, not counting the repatriation tax boondoggle in 2005, which I'll talk about. $180 billion to try to stop the collapse in 2008 when it began in the U.S. economy, didn't work. And then Obama comes in office, $300 billion more in tax cuts. Doesn't get a recovery at the end of 2010, $800 billion more in tax cuts. Then he extends the Bush tax cuts, which were supposed to expire in 2010. He extends them for two more years at a cost of $450 billion a year, so that's $900 billion more. And then he agrees, Obama, to a fiscal cliff, as it was called, in 2013, where George Bush's tax cuts are extended for another decade at a cost of another $5 trillion. And now, the latest is another tax cut here by Trump Goldman Sachs. Well, we don't know exactly how much, but different estimates are like $2 trillion and so forth, but there's no numbers on this yet. You know, total numbers, total cost numbers, we'll see what Congressional Budget Office comes up with, but it's supposed to be $2 trillion more. Well, we'll see. I predict it may be even more. And you got all these Republicans who are, you know, for years talking about, oh, the deficits, the budget deficit of the government is so bad and the debt is so bad, and of course it is. But when they said that for years, it was, we got to cut social programs. Now, we got this huge tax cut coming under the Republicans, and then a peep out of them about the deficits. Oh, well, it just shows you, you know, the deficits aren't really their main concern. It's tax cutting for their constituency of businesses and wealthy investors. That's the real concern, always has been. Well, what we got here is part of the Trump administration attempt to resurrect and reestablish neoliberalism 2.0. And they're starting with the tax. Well, they started actually trying to push some tax cuts or repeal tax cuts from $600 billion that were embedded in the ACA, Obamacare. You know, that was really what they why they hated Obamacare. They, the wealthy, the 1% and businesses and so forth, had to pay taxes to fund for all the folks who had no insurance, couldn't get insurance. The market was so efficient, you know, they couldn't get insurance. So that's what they started out with here this year, but through their own fault, Republicans can't get together. That isn't dead by any means. Don't think so. If you think the failure of the Graham-Cassidy bill was the end, it's never the end. They never give up. They will come back at it. And you will probably see embedded in the Trump tax plan some of the repeals of the Obamacare taxes that they couldn't get by changing the ACA law itself. They'll bury some of this somewhere back in the bill, and some of the, you know, biggest tax hikes under ACA will end up as cuts once again. Okay. When we talk about tax cuts, business tax cuts, we're talking about corporate tax cuts, we're talking about personal income tax cuts for investors, individual investors. You see, there's the corporate tax and there's personal income tax, and then there's the inheritance tax and the payroll tax. Those are the four main elements. You know, there's excise taxes, a few minor things here and there, but the four main elements of the federal tax system are personal income tax, which is about 40-45% of total government revenues, the corporate income tax, which is in single digits now, I think 6%. It used to be 20%. It's only 6% now, right? The inheritance estate tax, which has been liberalized for the wealthy more and more. You only pay inheritance tax if you have an estate of over $5.5 million or more, or for a family over $10 million. So, you know, it's like 0.1% of the households, 130 million households in the U.S. Actually pay any inheritance tax. But it takes a big chunk out of the rich, you see. Inheritance tax, that's the third major, and the payroll tax, which, you know, began with Social Security payroll tax, and other taxes have been added to it ever since. So those are the four major elements of federal income tax, and they date back to World War I. That's when we had a true tax revolution in World War I to pay for World War. The personal income tax was established, and only on the very rich. You see, workers never paid any personal income tax. You know, the threshold was high on only the very rich. Workers didn't pay until World War II. That's when they, quote, broadened. They say they broadened the tax base. Means, in other words, they're making people, working class and other wage earners, pay more. It was in World War II that they extended the personal income tax down into the working class, you see. And they established payroll deduction, the federal income tax. When they passed those laws in World War II, they said, oh, when the war ends, then, you know, we're going to eliminate the tax on the working class and payroll deduction. We're going to go back to what it was before. And, of course, they didn't, right? It was too lucrative. And we're still paying payroll deduction here, right? Okay. So these four elements of the federal tax structure are under attack, you see, because neoliberalism has almost reduced the corporate income tax to nothing. It's only like 6% of revenue, I think. Trump has proposed to totally abolish the inheritance estate tax. We still have the personal income tax, but as I'll explain, there's a shift in income within it and between it and the payroll taxes. Okay. Business tax, corporate income tax, and it's not just the tax rate, you see. You hear a lot of talk about the 35% nominal tax, corporate tax rate. Nominal, that's not what they really pay. that's nominal. But their corporate tax is only one of several business taxes. There's depreciation, which is really a tax write-off. There are various loopholes. There's the foreign profits tax that no one's been paying for a while. There's interest that's considered cost to business and therefore a tax cut. You know, they deduct their interest charges, which is great for banks, right? You and I can't deduct interest. Well, in the 70s, we could, you see. In the 1970s, before neoliberalism, you could deduct from your income taxes, the interest on your debt, from your car debt, you know, your credit cards, whatever. You could deduct it. You can't do it anymore, right? For us, they can, and it's a big tax deduction for businesses. They can also deduct the cost of providing health care, employer-provided health care. Yeah, that's deductible for businesses. That's part of the corporate tax structure or business tax structure. And then there is what's called pass-through for proprietorships, non-corporate businesses. That's a big tax gimme for businesses. So when you look at the tax cuts under Trump here, there's all these corporate business tax cuts, but there's also investor personal income tax cuts. The personal income tax rate tops out now at 39.6. That's going to be reduced as well. The corporate tax rate is going to be reduced under Trump from 35. He's proposing 25. And actually, there's more than that. 25 to 35. Well, if they're only paying 12%, now, effective tax rate on 35, what are they going to pay when it's reduced to 25? What? 8%? I don't know. It certainly will be parallel in some sense, roughly. Cut the big nominal tax rate and, you know, keep all the other loopholes and don't pay anything in foreign profits tax and keep the five-year averaging and keep the interest and deduction of health care costs, so forth, you know, it's going to be less than 10%. But that's on the corporate business side, see? On the personal side, you have the personal income tax, and that's where a couple of other big boondoggles here in the Trump tax bill come to play. In other words, he's abolishing the estate tax altogether. He said nothing about carried interest, in which speculators get to declare their profits as just income and therefore get to choose the lower tax rate. You see, if I'm a hedge fund manager and I get for myself $200,000 salary and 2% of all the profits of my hedge fund, I only have to pay 15% interest. I don't pay the 39.6% because I'm making over $400,000 easily, way over. Now, that's the threshold for 39.6, $414,000 new income every year. I only pay 15%, so 39.6. That's called the carried interest, and it's a deduction, and that is really favors financial speculators and shadow bankers and bankers and hedge funds and private equity funds and those guys, right? So nothing about doing anything about that in this proposal. Abolish the estate tax, which is like $60, $70 billion a year. Abolish as well the alternative minimum tax, which is a device which requires the very, very rich to pay something even after they manipulate all of their loopholes. You see, they still have to pay something. Well, that's been abolished altogether. And then, of course, the capital gains rates and dividend rates, which are lower at 20%. Then, in other words, if you sell your stock and you get big dividends, you only pay 20%. You don't have to pay 39.6% if you're a wealthy investor. See, that's the way it is now. And by the way, in the last 6 years, the amount of dividends and stock buybacks, capital gains, that have been distributed by corporations to their shareholders has been over $1 trillion a year. $6 trillion in dividends and stock buybacks, and that's just distributing the largesse from the tax cuts and profits of business that already exist. And now we're going to cut those business taxes and corporate taxes even more and cut the personal income taxes for the rich even more so they get to distribute even more to their shareholders and the shareholders get to keep even more. You see, that's the real source of the income inequality crisis that we have. Yeah, we're at the same time we hold down wages. Well, we talked about wages the other day, you know, and the claims that now, finally, the last 2 years, wage incomes have been rising, which is just BS. Well, because that's just full-time workers, you know, looking at 60 million people who are unemployed or part-time or temp or contract or whatever. Well, anyway, I don't want to go over that again. But the point I'm making is corporate tax cuts and investor tax cuts, corporations get to keep more, pass it on more to their investors who get to pay less taxes, even more. No change in capital gains rates. Eliminate AMT, eliminate estate taxes, keep the carried interest, and reduced the rate, personal income rate. Okay, how does Trump do this? If you look at the Trump proposal, it reduces brackets, in which personal income tax I'm talking about here, reduces the brackets in which people pay. Whenever you see bracket reduction, it means a tax cut for the top brackets, always. Reagan was the first to reduce it to only three brackets. And it's drifted up since then under George Herbert Walker Bush. That's why he didn't get elected. You know, he raised taxes on the rich to pay for the war, and their first war there in the Middle East. Okay, so what Trump is doing is, let's go back to Reagan. Let's reduce it to three brackets. The three brackets would be 12%, 25%, 35%. 35% applies to the top rate income level of $418,400. That may change, but he's silent on that. We don't know. So we'll just say $418,000. Instead of paying 39.6, you'll pay 35 before. That's the nominal rate now. That's before you apply all your loopholes. However, the 25% rate for those making $191,000 to $418,000, right, they will enjoy a reduction from 28% to 25%. So those over $400,000 go from 39.6 to 35, and those over $191,000 go from 28 to 25. But now look at this. If you're earning between $38,000 and $91,000, in other words, the working class, $90,000 below wage earners, we're talking about wage earners now, no change. You're still going to pay 25%. No change. So what about below $38,000? Well, they will get a tax cut, nominal, from 15 to 12%. Okay. Well, you know, this is typical. This is typical. What I've just described, the personal income tax, has been going on for 30-some years, in which they cut the top rate, and then they make a token cut on the very working poor to make it look like they're being fair. But the middle class doesn't get any deal out of this, you see. If you're at $38,000, $91,000, you know, no change in the nominal rate for you, If you're above 991,000, yeah, you get some, 28-25%. And if you're above 400,000 income flow, new income every year, you're going to get a pretty good reduction here from 39 to 35 in the nominal rate. But you're really going to get the tax cut largesse if you're up in that 1%, 191 to 418, right? You're really going to get it because you no longer will pay alternative minimum tax. That's where you're going to really enjoy the benefits. No alternative income tax and no estate tax. You see? And if you are a small company, you're not a corporation, you're a proprietorship, as we call it, or a partnership, big increases in pass-through, untaxable pass-through income. Yes, big benefits there in the pass-through income. You're going to have all kinds of non-corporate businesses claiming everything they earn is not a wage, it's passable income. So they will declare much less income than they're really making and therefore pay much less taxes. You see, doctors and lawyers and all those professionals, they're going to get a deal here. And no estate, no alternative minimum, no change in capital gains, no change in carried interest. This is a tax cut for the wealthy and their institutions, their corporations, and or the non-corporate businesses. That's what this is all about. Now, deductions, pass-through business. Let me go pass-through business. 95% of all the businesses are involved with pass-through business income. 40% of them were taxed at the 39.6% rate. That will be reduced now to 25%. 40% were at the 39.6 business income. In other words, doctors and lawyers and all those guys are making more than $191,000. Many of them over $400,000, right? And most of the business corporate tax revenue, you know, that 6% of total federal revenues, the corporate tax, and this pass-through income, business pass-through income, right, makes up most of the business taxes and corporate taxes. And that's going to go down as a percentage even further. Instead of the 6 or 8%, whatever it is, it's going to go down probably below 5%. They're almost eliminating the corporate business taxes, in other words. Right? They eliminate the inheritance estate tax. All you've got left is the personal income tax and payroll taxes. Okay. Some other big boondoggles here for corporations as well. One is called the territorial tax. What is that? Well, the U.S., nominally taxes businesses for their profits offshore. I say nominally because they're just not paying it, offshore taxes. And what companies, industries like tech industry and pharma and banks and do, what they do is they play with their internal pricing and they therefore end up claiming all the profits in the company at large in their offshore subsidiaries. And then they don't pay the tax on the profits offshore, you see. I mean, there's supposed to be a thing called profits, foreign profits tax, not implemented. There's about $2.6 trillion hoarded offshore in subsidiaries. I'm not talking about the amount that we don't know that's hoarded offshore in tax havens, you know, in Cayman Islands and places like that. I'm just talking about what's publicly identified, $2.6 trillion in offshore subsidiaries. You know, a good case example is Apple Corporation, right? $260 billion in profits. 95% of it is held offshore in subsidiaries and not paying taxes. Well, the Trump tax proposal is to end the territorial tax. In other words, saying the corporations don't have to pay taxes on offshore. Well, you think they're not going to play this internal pricing game and move even more profits offshore where they don't have to pay taxes and therefore reduce the amount of taxes they pay onshore? Well, of course. This was already tried in 2005, you see. They already did this. Already then, the tech and pharma companies were shuffling their profits offshore. There was maybe $700 billion in 2005 in offshore subsidiaries. Congress, instead of enforcing the foreign profits tax, put some people in jail for not paying their taxes in these corporations. Instead of that, they gave them a freebie. They said, okay, if you bring this money back that you're hoarding offshore, you won't have to pay 35% corporate tax. You only have to pay 5.25%. But you got to, if you bring it back, you've got to use it to create jobs, you see. You got to invest in the U.S. Well, they brought it back, but they didn't do that. You can read the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, in the first months of January, February 2005, reporting on how much each of these companies were bringing back and where the money was going. The money wasn't going into real investment, real jobs expanding in the U.S. It was going to buy up their competitors in merger and acquisition and in dividend payouts to their shareholders. They weren't reinvesting. They brought back about $350 billion, and that's what they did with it. And it's all public record. And now they're proposing the same thing. Well, don't you think when you let them get away with bringing $350 billion back and not investing it that these tech and pharma companies and banks aren't going to try the same thing again? Well, they did. And now they got $2.6 trillion offshore. And now part of this deal is bring it back and you only have to pay 10%. Well, already the equity companies and others are gearing up. You can read it. They're gearing up for new merger and acquisition boom. Yes, they know the money's coming back, and they know it's going to be used for mergers and acquisitions once again, and they're getting ready for it. And, of course, this ending the territorial tax and this repatriation, one-time repatriation boondoggle, well, this is the second time repatriation boondoggle, you don't think this is going to stimulate more offshoring of investment? Of course it is. Well, wait a minute. That's not going to bring jobs back, is it? No. It's going to intensify more jobs flowing offshore. Well, so much for Trump's trade, free trade proposals, right? Which is just another lie. Okay, so the corporations are going to get big tax reductions in the nominal rate and therefore the effective rate. There's talk about ending territorial tax, one-time repatriation, carried interest continuing, inheritance tax, ultimate minimum tax, top rate reduced to 35. Okay, so how are you going to pay for all this? Well, remember that the middle class, 38 to 91,000, wasn't getting any nominal, even nominal tax reduction out of this, right? They're going to pay for it because there's a lot of talk about ending the state and local tax credit, which brings in $1 trillion over a decade. In other words, you're going to, especially those states, where you have a corporate income tax, you know, the blue states, the Northeast, East Coast, and the West Coast, right? In other words, Trump proposes to penalize the Democratic base here by ending $1 trillion the state and local tax credit, right? he says, but we're going to increase the standard deduction, even though we do that, right? Well, you're going to increase the standard deduction, but he proposes to end the personal deduction. If what's the effect of increasing the doubling the standard deduction, as he says? Well, if you're single, instead of a standard deduction of $10,400, you're going to get a deduction of $12,000. Okay. All right, so that's $1,600, right? Ah, but if you're married with two kids, you're going to pay more. Your deduction is going to decline. It's not going to increase. Okay, so not so good, huh? If you're married with two kids, if you're single, okay. You get a little bit of a taste of a deduction, right? But, you know, families with two kids usually have homes and pay state and local taxes and mortgage deductions and so forth. So, in other words, the loopholes will be, quote, loopholes, closed for middle-class incomes and kept open or expanded for wealthy incomes as part of this deal. You know, the big benefits come from the marginal rate concentration or consolidation and nominal tax rate cuts, pass-through business income, big deal for non-corporate businesses, corporate tax rate reduction, eliminate territory tax, one-time repatriation, keep expensing, business expensing, in other words, deducting their costs from their tax bill, carried interest, nothing said there, inheritance, eliminated, ultimate minimum tax eliminated, right? And who knows what's buried in the bill here as far as the ACA tax repeals on the rich. This is more of the same, you see. If you look at the history of neoliberal tax cuts, it's a combination of ideology and what I call the tax cut shell game. What's the tax cut shell game? Well, there's several elements to it. It's shifting of taxes and tax burdens. You lower business taxes and you raise payroll taxes. Yeah? Well, the corporate income tax has declined from, as I said, over 20% of total federal revenue to about 6%. I may be off a percent or two. I'm down at 6%. I haven't looked at it recently. But you raise payroll taxes that workers have to pay. See, that's part of the shift. Lower that and raise payroll tax. Payroll tax is like 40-45% of all federal revenue now. It's right up there with personal income tax. About the same. They're both about the same. So you lower the business taxes and you raise the payroll taxes over time. It's a shift from business to payroll. Also, you know, I said the personal income tax is about 44% of all federal revenues. But what's going on within the personal income tax is a shift from high-end income earners to low-end, or middle, excuse me, middle, not low-end, middle. They always, you know, neoliberals are guilty about the poor, so they always give them a little tiny taste. And it gives them a good ideological argument. We're being fair. It's not all for the rich. See? But the middle class, they're the ones that get screwed. Middle class is really working class. Come on. You know, over 110 million of the 132 million households make less than $100,000 a year. You know, that's wage earners. That's working class. I don't care what your income level is. You're a wage earner. If you're a CEO of a company, your salary is only 7 to 10% of your total compensation, you see. The rest is all capital gains, stocks, and so forth. Okay, so the essence of neoliberal tax policy is, over time, shift from business to payroll taxes, one. Number two, within the personal income tax, redistribute from the top end to the bottom end. Another shell game is you raise the tax rate, but you open up loopholes for corporations and the wealthy. And then when people complain about it, it becomes obvious, right? What you do is close the loopholes and lower the tax rate. Well, that's where we are in this shell game with Trump, right? We're supposedly closing loopholes and lowering the tax rate on corporations and the wealthy. That's another a shift. You know, they alternate between major tax bills that come every 3-4 years, right? They alternate between lowering loopholes and raising rates, and, you know, raising loopholes as you lower rates, and the net result is always a benefit for the wealthy, you see, the net tax result of this. But it looks like you're doing something about loopholes, or you're doing something about the high rates, and back and forth, back and forth. Usually the Democrats, you know, open the loopholes and raise the rates. And then Republicans come in and they lower the rates and say they are closing loopholes, but they don't close very many. And over time, the tax take by the wealthy increases. Now, you will hear that wealthy say, well, we're paying more in absolute terms in taxes than we ever paid before. Yes. But in relative terms, relative to the rest, you're paying less. And, of course, they're paying more absolutely because they're making huge, huge amounts more income than they ever made before. But they're paying less and less of that income increase than they ever paid before. And they don't care, because they don't care about the deficits. They'll just borrow the money. Sell treasury bonds. Borrow the money and make up the deficit. Adds to the debt. When you do that, because you're borrowing money, adds to the debt, but they don't care about the national debt. Just a couple ideologues on the far right care about that debt. Another trend is you cut taxes for the very poor when you cut taxes for the very rich. Makes it look good. But you raise it on the middle class, you see. Right. Another thing is you boost financial asset income from dividends, interest, stocks and bonds, capital gains, property speculation, so on and so forth, but you never institute a financial transaction tax, you see. No, no, no. Do you think Goldman Sachs would even think about that? No. No financial transaction tax, even though the total share of income going to financial investments is growing as a share of total investment income as the economy financializes, you see. You talk about nominal rates instead of effective rates. You talk about, oh, we're paying more than any other countries, in this territorial tax, double tax, territorial tax, where the tax rate is the U.S. is highest up. They don't have as many loopholes as we do. You know what the tech companies, you know, like Google and Apple, actually pay in terms of taxes to other governments? Maybe 2-3%. You know, on top of the 12% effective rate they pay in the U.S., and add another 2-3% to foreign governments. You know, that's why Europe is trying to up its tax rate of these tech companies. And what about those states in the U.S. that actually have a corporate income tax? Maybe 2%. So if you look at their total tax burden, they claim it's over 50% when they add in states and foreign entities. Actually, it's about 17%. and they still want to reduce it. Yeah, well, this is part of neoliberalism, you see. Keep plugging away, playing these shell games about loopholes and tax rates alternate, right, between nominal. Don't talk about effective, just talk about nominal. Alternate between nominal and loopholes. Get rid of the corporate, add payroll, regressive payroll taxes. That's part of the shell game, right? Loopholes for rates, nominal, don't mention effective, shift from corporate and business tax revenues to earned income tax revenues, give a little concession to the working, lowest wage working poor. This is the shell game that goes on time and time again. And it's complex, and people don't see it necessarily. But that's what's happening. You see, that's neoliberalism. That's the tax shell game. And the whole tax game is at the heart of neoliberalism, as is war and defense spending. Because if you're going offshore, see, you want to ensure, if you're doing offshoring, if you're doing free trade, which is mostly free trade with American companies that have moved offshore, you see, if you're doing that, you want to make sure you protect those markets from any challenges, both by indigenous people in their own countries or by those that might challenge the U.S. So you got to boost up your defense spending to protect those markets. And, of course, it becomes a self-perpetuating arrangement, right? I mean, Saudi Arabia just doesn't have enough F-16s, you know. So we got to sell them even more. And we engage in all these offshore wars to keep the opposition off balance. You see, these wars aren't meant to be won. They're meant to cause chaos and keep everybody fighting with everybody else. That's what the Middle East is all about. Okay, so that's the neoliberal tax game, the neoliberal Trump Goldman Sachs tax game. And it keeps going because it's the essence of neoliberalism. Taxes, war spending, cut social programs, twin deficits, and make the rich even richer. Jack Rasmus. Next week, we're going to talk about financial bubbles. Are they bubbling again? And where?